Yes, indeedy. That's our, as Reverend says, my choir. Well, I can say it too. That's my choir. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, choir. And the trio and Rodney Long, our musical director. Yes, 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 yes. Good morning, and welcome to Unity of Washington, D.C. I am Reverend Dr. Beverly Saunders Biddle, and I am honored to be here this morning and to welcome you, both those here in the congregation and, of course, you online. We love you and we bless you. So welcome, because we know this is your day of divine appointment, and know that you are in the right place at the right time. And I know we all know it. And I am always, and I just love it, this is my church home, and I'm just grateful. I'm always grateful to have been invited by our dear Reverend Sylvia. You know, when, you know, ministers don't just let anybody come into their pulpit and speak. So I am honored to be here this morning. And to be among a circle of ministers who are supporting her as she takes time for herself and supporting her as she moves through her healing process. So as that continues to unfold within her and she prepares herself and our church for our next level of greatness, I send love and blessings always to Reverend Sylvia. This morning, and I see God's perfecting power moving in, through, and as her as she continues to move forward through her process. Because we know that restoring that wholeness is her divine birthright. So I say that and I bless that, and so it is. So please join me in giving our Reverend praise and gratitude for the healing that's occurring within her. So let's just give her some love. And thank her for 35 years as our senior minister. She has served us teaching, speaking, preaching, counseling, leading, all of that. You know, with that smile on her face and that love in her heart. So we just send that love right back to her. And her Easter message, her last Easter message for us, was just icing on the proverbial cake, don't you think? That great shakeup. I certainly thought about crucifixion and resurrection, you know, of course, through that service and through that message. And I reflected upon all that Reverend Sylvia brought to our awareness. The powerful events that occurred during the crucifixion and thereafter. And perhaps more importantly, upon those events and what they represented for us. That state of consciousness that our elder brother and way shower, Jesus the Christ, took on, and the awakening of himself as the anointed of God, laying an example of what it means when we are willing and able to step into our true identity as Christ's beings. And as adherents of practical Christianity that is unity, I invite us all to remember that too. Metaphysically, we know that crucifixion is crossing out perceived limitations in preparation for the resurrection experience. Resurrection is what the revealing word, according to Charles Fillmore, suggests that there has been a falling short. And I lost my page. A falling short of that divine standard. Therefore, the necessity of being restored and revived. And it is that restoring of mind and body to our original undying state. So I thought about what happened after Jesus' resurrection, After his amazing demonstration of the power of love and the power of love over fear, life over death, love over fear and hate, the power of forgiveness over judgment and resentment. And not just the tremendous occurrences that Reverend referenced that happened on the earth during the crucifixion, but what did the disciples do? And what did Jesus do after the resurrection? And as the word spread throughout the region, we know that there were many who were still in disbelief about what was being shared. And even among his disciples, until they saw him again face to face, after all that he had taught them, all that they had witnessed, he had done his absolute best to prepare them, yet there was still some doubt. And within us, there may still be some doubt as well. As much as we have heard the story of the resurrection year after year after year and studied our scriptures, there may still be questions, right? As much as we pray, as much as we meditate, as much as we study, our faith may waver from time to time. So this morning's message is spiritual restoration, which is anchoring our faith and reclaiming our devotion to God, if and when we have allowed our spiritual practice to fall by the wayside, or we have in some ways forgotten or abandoned or even forsaken what we know to be the truth. In the everyday sense of the word, we all know a bit about restoration. I'm sure that several of you here, me included, have found an old piece of furniture, or even maybe an antique, that had been neglected. Perhaps it had been moved around throughout the years, owned by several different individuals, lost its luster. Or it could even be a house that had several owners and several different occupants, some of whom didn't quite take great care of it. The roof may have been left to leak, or the floors needed to be refinished, or wallpaper was peeling, or the paint was dull and stained. Whatever it was, it may have needed some loving attention. Yet we could see its beauty even beyond and beneath its tired and worn appearance. It just needed to be restored to its original charm and elegance, or even enhanced or uplifted to a new level of brilliance, just like us. Could it be the same that it is true for us? At one point in time in our spiritual walk, we had been so diligent, right? In our daily practice and in our spiritual studies, we were faithful about continuing to grow in consciousness. We proclaimed what we came to know and understand as truth without any equivocation, both internally and externally. We attended services regularly and participated in uplifting classes and workshops. We filled our spiritual toolbox and used what we had acquired for the betterment of ourselves, for the betterment of our families and our communities. We did not waver from the teachings as we stood as powerful demonstrations of spiritual law and spiritual principles. We had become beacons and knew that we were beacons of light and love, of faith and forgiveness. We were clear about who and whose we had been called to be, that we were called to stand in the world as light bearers and spiritual warriors. We trusted that we had been given a divine assignment. We gave of our time, of our treasure, of our talent. Then something happened within our consciousness that was reflected throughout our behavior. Could it be that this is what happened to the Apostle Peter? Had he forgotten who he had been called to be? Or did he just experience a momentary lapse of judgment? Was it shame that motivated him to forget what he already knew, that he was the first among the disciples to recognize Jesus as the Christ? In Mark chapter 8, verses 27 to 29, when Jesus asked his disciples who people said he was, and when he asked the disciples who did they say he was, Peter said, "You, in contrast to others, are the Christ, the Messiah, the Anointed." He made a powerful declaration. Or was it fear or even an interruption of his faith that had Peter deny his teacher to whom he had been devotedly faithful, to whom he had declared his undying love and support, the one to whom he professed he would even die to protect? In Matthew chapter 26, Jesus said, "But after I am raised to life, I will go ahead of you, leading the way to Galilee." Peter replied to him, "Though they all fall away because of you and doubt and disown you, I will never fall away." Jesus said to him, "I assure you and most solemnly say to you this night, before a rooster crows, you will completely deny me three times." Peter said to Jesus, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same thing. Let us remember who Peter was to Jesus and who Jesus was to Peter. Other highlights from our Holy Scriptures in the Amplified Bible paint a picture. Peter was among the first disciples called by Jesus. In Matthew chapter 4, it is written, "Walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus said to Simon, who was called Peter, and his brother Andrew, 'Follow me,' as my disciples, accepting me as your master and teacher, and walking the same path of life that I walk, and I will make you fishers of men." In Mark chapter 3, verse 14, Peter was among the disciples that Jesus called apostles, who were described as his special messengers, personally chosen representatives. And then in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus said, "And I say to you that you are Peter. On this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades, or death, will not overpower it by preventing the resurrection of the Christ." And of course, we go on in the scripture. Mark chapter 14, when Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, it is written, "But one of the bystanders, Simon Peter, drew his sword and struck Malchus, the slave of the high priest, and cut off his ear." Even after all this, John's gospel reads that after following Jesus to be questioned and surrounded by unbelievers, Peter most vehemently said he did not even know Jesus. First, that he was not one who had been with Jesus. Second, that he was not Jesus' disciple. And lastly, that he was not with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Following all of his proclamations of knowing that Jesus was the Christ and that he would faithfully follow and protect him, Peter still denied three times knowing Jesus. This was a deed that pained Peter when he remembered Jesus' warning about what was to occur. And he wept bitterly in anguish. Peter's denials had temporarily removed him from this place of honor and would ultimately have eliminated the possibility of later reverence of him as among the followers of the way that now we call Christianity. Yet after betraying Jesus in the high priest Caiaphas' courtyard, Peter's plan was not to last. His pain was not to last. After the resurrection, Jesus restored Peter to his place as a faithful disciple and apostle. What an example to all of us that grace and forgiveness and love is always available. Just as our limiting thoughts and beliefs can be crossed out through our own crucifixion experience, Peter's harsh words of betrayal against Jesus were crossed out during a presumably intense questioning of him by his master teacher. Imagine the trepidation he must have felt seeing Jesus along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, knowing what he had done and knowing, even more so, that Jesus already knew because he had predicted it beforehand. Jesus had prepared a breakfast for his disciples who had returned to their previous vocation as fishermen. After breakfast, Jesus performed what must have seemed like an interrogation of Peter. And it's written in John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these others do, with total commitment and devotion?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you with a deep personal affection, as for a close friend." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." Again, he said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me with total commitment and devotion?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you with a deep personal affection, as for a close friend." Jesus said to him, "Shepherd my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me with a deep personal affection for me, as for a close friend?" Peter was grieved that he was asked a third time, "Do you really love me with a deep personal affection, as for a close friend?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you with a deep personal affection, as for a close friend." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." In verse 19, Jesus continued his sharing the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. "Follow me, walk the same path that I have lived and that I have walked." Of course, we know that Peter became a fierce apologist of what is known now as Christianity. Once restored, he demonstrated an unwavering faith. And although this is not written in Scripture, historians have noted that Peter became the first bishop of Rome and was crucified during the reign of the Roman Emperor Nero. Church tradition holds that Peter was crucified upside down because due to his denial of his Lord, he did not even feel worthy of dying in the same manner that Jesus did. According to Charles Fillmore, Peter represents faith, yet his faith was presumptuous because early on, it had not been grounded in love. Peter wavered many times in his faith because it had not been established in love. Hence why Jesus had him affirm love three times. In spirit, soul, and body, so that he would prepare and be prepared to serve. Until faith is thoroughly identified with the Christ, we will find that this faith faculty will be a weathercock. Allegiance will be sincerely affirmed, and then when adversity appears, there will be a denial of ever knowing spirit. His faith was restored, having been anchored in love, true love of the Christ. So as we endeavor to overcome the threats imposed upon us by the traps of this world, we can participate in a process to restore our mind and body to their original undying state. We may need to engage in some soul surgery, activating an effective spiritual tool, our faith faculty. Would we have to go to such great lengths as Peter did to prove our faith or justify our obedience? Does our spiritual journey need to be quite so dramatic? Even the most devout among us may experience a period or periods of feeling stuck in a rut when it comes to our spiritual practice or our service to God and God's people. At those times, we may feel that we have somehow broken our relationship with God. I know there have been times when I have felt that I was perhaps falling short, as do congregants that I may see in the community, and they'll confess to me that they haven't been to church in some time. Of course, I remind them that God is everywhere present, at one time, in fullness, not just here at 1225 R Street. Now, I certainly am inviting everyone to return to church, so don't go telling Rev that I've, you know, advised people that it's okay not to come to church. Oh, don't get me in trouble. I'm not discouraging anyone. What I am saying, though, is that God is everywhere. And even when we believe that we've fallen short, there's no love lost between us and God. There's no separation between us and God. And our bond with our Creator can never be broken, can never be lessened. Perhaps when we believe that we have fallen short, we can find a less painful resolution than the one experienced by Peter. Perhaps we can be restored through other means, such as surrendering what may feel like spiritual stagnation. Perhaps what we thought had been broken or torn apart can be restored by giving it new energy and new life. We can be motivated by refreshing ourselves through a recommitment to a journey of a profound inner growth. These times may just be when we need to step back, fall back in love, and reconnect to God to achieve a renewed, dare I say, restored spirit. A crucial step for us may be to restore our faith, particularly during such times as these, when we may be swayed by what is occurring out in the world of effects. When we make a choice to re-energize ourselves on a soul level, that faith factor, that fundamental intrinsic cause, may be our saving grace. Taken from the Revealing Word, again by Charles Fillmore, faith is the perceiving power of the mind linked with the power to shape substance. You know, that spiritual Play-Doh. He didn't say that, but I said that. It is spiritual assurance. The power to do the seemingly impossible. It is a magnetic power that draws us our heart's desire. from the invisible spiritual substance. Faith is a deep inner knowing that that which is sought by us is already ours for the taking. As a spiritual principle, faith is a powerful divine faculty for the purpose of anchoring our relationships with spirit and our relationship with ourselves. It supports us to move forward to manifest God's good. Faith is our supreme affirming faculty. And it's not just saying yes to God, yes to the good, yes to truth. It's the ability to trust and believe in the divine goodness of life, the one that's always deserving, that we are always deserving of. It's an attitude that must be exercised, considered by many to be the most important faculty and principle upon which spiritual faculties depend. It always is, and we cannot lose it. It is contingent upon how we direct it, though, what we place our faith in. James C. Lewis writes in The Key to Spiritual Growth that we preserve our faith in God by realizing the all-inclusive nature of his love. There are many ways that we can reestablish ourselves on our spiritual journey. I was just thought that life doesn't have to be hard. And we do make life really hard. We are masters of making things hard. We get to be, though, self-supportive, self-healing, and self-loving. And certainly get to be loving to God and to others, as we were taught by our elder brother and way-shower, Jesus the Christ. We get to exercise unwavering faith as he did. So let us embark upon a journey of spiritual restoration. I offer that we embrace this as our first step, as taken from Romans 12, chapter 2, as written in the Message Bible. Place your life before God. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well-adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-informed maturity in you. So in closing, I leave you with this prayer of faith by Hannah Moore Kohas. Next to the prayer for protection, it's the most often used prayer in Unity, and it was a favorite of our co-founder, Myrtle Fillmore. God is my help in every need. God does my ever hunger feed. God walks beside me, guides my way through every moment of this day. I now am wise, I now am true, patient and kind and loving too. All things I am, can do, and be through Christ, the truth that is in me. God is my health. I can't be sick. God is my strength, unfailing quick. God is my all. I know no fear, since God and love and truth are near. And so it is. Blessings.